insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Hi there.
Yes, hi there and welcome back. This is hour three of the Patrick Madrid Show. I really appreciate you listening. Thank you for telling your friends about the program. And be sure to tell everybody to download the Relevant Radio app. We can get more and more and more people listening to this program. That's always fun. Strength in numbers, right? The number to call to be on the air is 888-914-9149. That number is sponsored by Catholic Order of Foresters. 888-914-9149. We'll start off with Grace in Palmdale, California. Good morning, Grace.
Good morning, Patrick.
Good morning. Are you 9 years old? That's what they told me.
Yeah.
That's great. I remember being 9 years old. That's a great age to be.
Yeah. Okay. I had a question for you.
Okay.
I'm interested in reading the Bible, and I was wondering what I should read.
Well, do you have a children's Bible that's illustrated? That's always a good thing if you're, you know.
It's not necessarily illustrated. Okay. I got it from the church that I used to go to.
Oh, when you say a church you used to go to, was it a Catholic church?
Yeah, it was a Catholic church.
Okay, that's good. So you're Catholic, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, I mean, how are you a good reader? I mean, do you like to read?
Yeah.
Would you want to read something that didn't have pictures, but you were just reading the text?
Yeah, I'd be okay with that.
Okay. All right. Well, in that case, there are a number of different Bibles. I'm just trying to think in terms of if you would want a what's called a children's Bible as opposed to, you know, something that's like something your parents would have. If you want to read something like what your parents would have, you can just get a regular Bible like the Revised Standard Version Catholic Edition. Sometimes it's called the Ignatius Bible. That's one. If you want a picture Bible, there are some that are really good. I'm looking at one of them that I've actually seen this before. It's got a picture of Moses on the front cover with the Ten Commandments. And it's called the Picture Bible, God's Word Brought to Life in Pictures. That could be one that you would enjoy. And maybe after you've gone through that one, you could bump up to a Bible that doesn't have pictures. What do you think about that?
Yeah, that would be good. I also have a different kind of question. Okay. I was wondering if I should start from the beginning or like the middle or the end.
Well, even adults have a difficult time if you start reading at the beginning. So you read the story of Adam and Eve in the book of Genesis, and then you move through Exodus and then the other books, so the first few books of the Bible, Deuteronomy and Leviticus. At that point, you're going to start getting into material that in some cases is not age appropriate for you because it deals with some things that are not for kids but for adults. But also, it starts to get really boring. So I think the better thing to do would be to read the Gospels. And if you wanted to get, so is your mom saying that she would get you a Bible if you pick out the kind you want?
Yeah.
Okay, so here's what I'd recommend. Is your mom nearby? Because if she can listen, I can tell
you. Yeah, she is.
Okay, so I would recommend a New Testament that is just the New Testament part of the Bible, and it doesn't have the Old Testament. Now, eventually, when you get older, you can read the Old Testament too. That's, I mean, there's nothing bad in it, but there's some things in it that are not appropriate for a 9-year-old. So what I would recommend, what I would recommend for you is the New Testament, New Catholic Version, St. Joseph edition. And it's like a leather-bound New Testament, and it begins with Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. And I think for you, that would be perfect. If you don't need pictures, I mean, there are some pictures in this, but if you don't need the pictures, then just start reading in Matthew's Gospel, chapter 1, verse 1. And then by the time you're done with the four Gospels, you are going to know Jesus a whole lot more deeply because you will meet him in the pages of the four Gospels. He'll speak to you. You can learn his teachings. These are all the things that Catholic Church teaches, but you'll hear them directly from Jesus. And then when you're done with the four Gospels, the next book is the Acts of the Apostles, where you continue the story after Jesus rose from the dead and then ascended into heaven. And then you find out, what did the apostles do at that point? And it's an amazing story, what they did. And that's all in the book of Acts. What is that? How does that sound to you, this idea?
It sounds good. My mom just bought the book that you recommended as well.
Did she buy it on Amazon?
Yeah.
See how fast it is? Isn't that amazing? You can buy a book. So that means you'll probably have that New Testament in your hands tomorrow. It'll probably arrive at your house tomorrow. That's amazing, isn't it?
Yep.
Well, how about this then? Once you get that and you start reading through the Gospels, if it's okay with your mom for you to call back in a few weeks, maybe you let me know what you think of it.
Okay.
Okay? I'd like to know. I'd like to know what you think about reading Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John in the book of Acts. I have a feeling your knowledge is going to go even deeper than it is now. Okay?
Thank you for having me here, Patrick.
You're welcome, Grace. Nice chatting with you. Now, are you the oldest child, the only child, or the youngest, or somewhere in the middle?
I'm somewhere in the middle.
How many total kids in your family?
Five.
So you are the middle child. There's two above you and two below you. Ah, you're the middle child. For now, anyway, in case your mom and dad have more children, right? That's great. I bet your mom's chuckling.
Yeah.
All right. Well, it's nice talking to you, Grace.
Yeah.
Okay. Bye-bye. Let's see. I was the oldest child, Cyrus. I'm the oldest of my siblings. So I only know siblinghood being the oldest. It has advantages and disadvantages, but
I was the oldest, the youngest, and the middle.
The oldest of one.
That's right.
Did you ever miss having, when you were, I mean, maybe later in life, do you ever look back and say, I wish I had had some siblings? Or was it cool to be the only child?
My mom said if there were more than one of me, she would have killed me a long time ago.
Well, it doesn't mean that the other siblings have to be like you.
The look young Thomas just gave me, it was funnier than maybe I just made it sound.
Your poor mom. Well, yeah, I know that you had an upbringing that was different from most, perhaps, but I'm glad I had siblings. And sometimes I am aware of situations where an only child really wishes that he or she had other brothers and sisters, but it's just not in the cards. So anyway.
I was lucky to have, I had friends that I considered my brothers, and their parents basically raised me as one of their own. So I was very, very fortunate, and I was, even though I was alone at home, I was surrounded by love whenever I went to
So Home Alone was a movie that really spoke to you then, huh?
I was like, Kevin, you're only home alone for 3 days? Big whoop.
You were home alone a lot more than that, but well, okay, fair enough. 888-914-9149. How about Sylvester now in San Antonio? Hello, Sylvester.
Hello, Patrick. My oldest daughter is 4 years old. She recently came home today, the other week, and mentioned that one of her classmates said that he has two dads. And my wife and I are looking for advice on how do we have the conversation with her on educating her that, you know, the Catholic way, the church way is, you know, man and a woman for a marriage, but also making sure that she doesn't go out and start to, you know, have her classmates start to, you know, say things, or we're just looking for advice.
Yeah. And how old is she again?
4 years old.
Oh boy.
She's in pre-K.
Okay. And is this a public pre-K?
Yes.
Okay. So if I may be so bold, Sylvester, I would strongly encourage you not to have her in an environment. You'll have to monitor things as it goes along. but to protect your daughter's innocence and as much as you can, and to look for any alternative if it does get bad enough so that she can be protected from some of these ideologies. So that's just a word to the wise, something to think about. Since she's only four, she not only does not understand homosexuality, she should not understand it. For that matter, she doesn't need to understand heterosexuality as such in terms of, you know, the mechanics of it, if you follow my meaning here. So at her young age and her innocence, I think it's enough to say God made marriage with Adam and Eve. He created Adam and Eve, the first man and the first woman. They got married. They had children. And Jesus said that this plan of God with Adam and Eve is his plan for everybody. So a man and a woman get married. And some people, they don't believe that. Some people, they think that they can do something different, like two men or two women. I wouldn't go any further than that. And that's wrong. And that's not what God's plan is. And it's really too bad that there are people who do that. And I'm sorry that, you know, this is raising some question or confusion in your mind. But for the time being, all you need to know right now is that God made men and women to get married to each other. And I would leave it at that. And I would just let her know, you know what the truth is. You know what God's plan is. You know that mommy and I got married. That's when people get married, the man and the woman get married, that's where babies come from. And you don't have to explain anything more to her on that level. That'll be enough. And then at least she knows, okay, well, there are some people who disagree. And you could say, there are some people, believe it or not, who don't even believe in God. Or there are some people who think the earth is flat. Or there are some people who have all kinds of ideas that aren't true, but yet some people believe these things that are not true. And you don't have to worry about that as long as you know what's true. You know the earth is not flat. You know it's round. You know that God exists, even though there are people who will say God doesn't exist. You know the truth, and so on. So in other words, you're reinforcing her, what's the word I want here? You're reinforcing her confidence that she's aware of what is true, and you at the same time are pointing out, even though you know it's true, be aware there are people who will deny that truth, and they think other things. So I think that would be enough for a four-year-old. And then, be vigilant, and if something more percolates and she's wondering about this, or they say more things in the classroom or something like that, then, of course, you deal with it as things unfold. Hopefully they won't go beyond where they are now, though. So that's how I would approach it. Sylvester, what do you think?
I think I had my wife also listening. And so and what really hit home is that she's 4 years old and she doesn't need to be really understanding or being educated on anything beyond that. Even at the heterosexual. So that very stood home to me. So yeah, I appreciate the advice, Patrick. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome, Sylvester. Yeah, we want to protect this little girl's innocence and not let it be torn away from her before, eventually we all lose our innocence in terms of what we think of, and then we're introduced to things that we didn't have any clue about before. Let's keep that as long as we can for her. And so I think with this loving fatherly and motherly advice, you can accomplish, in other words, you can insulate her from the problem in the sense that she knows what's right and what's wrong. And then as she gets older and there are more and more situations that she will have questions about, then you have something to build upon.
That's great advice. I appreciate it, Patrick.
You're welcome, Sylvester. Thank you. Yeah, thanks for being an attentive father, too, because some people, they don't really think about the damage that these things do, even at a very young level, to their children, only to find out later that the kids have learned all kinds of things in school that they had no business learning. And I'm not talking about the three R's either. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Lauren now in Wausau, Wisconsin. Good morning, Lauren.
Hello, Patrick.
Yes, hello.
I have a question about that, like in the Divine Mercy Chaplet, when they say, Eternal Father, I offer you the body, blood, soul, divinity of our dearly beloved Son, our Lord Jesus Christ, in atonement for our sins and those of the whole world. A friend of mine was saying that with his wife, and then she asked me, how can we offer that to God when it's already been offered? How is it our right to offer that?
It's because we are united with Jesus, so we are members of his mystical body. So we participate with him. And it's in that sense, it's subordinate, of course, and it doesn't mean that we have some special prerogative or special authority to do this. It's only in and through participating with Jesus. So as you know, we are, Jesus says, I am the vine and you are the branches. The branches participate in the life of the vine, connected to the vine and to each other through the vine. St. Paul uses a different analogy in 1 Corinthians 12 and Romans 12, where he talks about like a physical body, a human body, with fingers and toes and eyes and ears and things like that. So this language of I offer you is understood to be that we, united with Jesus, are with him as he's offering himself as victim and priest. That's what it's referring to.
Okay, so kind of like when we offer our Mass or our Eucharist for someone, kind of on the same lines as that?
Yes, yeah, the same kind of thing. So here's a passage that may be helpful. In Hebrews 13, I'll begin in verse 8, Jesus Christ is the same yesterday and today and forever. Do not be led away by diverse and strange teachings, for it is well that the heart be strengthened by grace, not by foods which have not benefited their adherents. We have an altar from which those who serve the tent have no right to eat. It's referring there to the Jews. It says, we have an altar. This is an allusion to the altar, an allusion, A-L-L, not I-L-L. It's an allusion to the altar of sacrifice of the Mass. We have an altar from which those who serve the tent have no right to eat. For the bodies of those animals whose blood is brought into the sanctuary by the high priest as a sacrifice for sin are burned outside the camp. So Jesus also suffered outside the gate in order to sanctify the people through his own blood. So in this passage, we're seeing the connection. And again, it's an allusion to the Mass. It's not a direct reference to it, but he's referring to an altar. And the food that we eat from this altar, he associates in Hebrews 13:12 with the once-for-all sacrifice of Jesus, his flesh and his blood that is brought to us by a sacrifice on the cross. So in this passage, we can see that this sacrifice is something that we have a connection to. We participate, you might say, as members of the body of Christ. So this is just a passage that can help shed a little bit of light on this issue, but that's the sense in which the prayer is intended, united with Jesus. Like, as you said, offering your Holy Communion for different intentions.
Yeah, that's super helpful. I'll let them re-listen to it. And also, I didn't know the answer either, so it's helpful to me as well.
Win, 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 right?
Yep.
Well, hey, Lauren, good chatting with you. I have to take a break, but I'll be right back with more right after this. Today, we'd like to thank Viviana, who is listening in California, for donating her 1975 Mercedes-Benz 450. That's elegant. You can join thousands of other listeners in donating old vehicles, trucks, boats, and RVs by visiting relevantradio.com/car. That's relevantradio.com/car.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Have a question? Give Patrick a call. 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid on Relevant Radio. Don't bring me
down. Okay, love it. ELO, always good stuff. Well done, Cyrus. This number is sponsored by Catholic Order of Foresters, 888-914-9149. Call that number. We'll get you on the air, 888-914-9149. Let's go to Joshua now in Ohio. Excuse me. Welcome, Joshua.
Hi. Thanks for having me on. Sure. So my question is, we have some biological categories like fatherhood, where okay. there's also a significant social status to it.
Okay.
And you can revoke it by abandoning your child or abusing him. Similarly, with adulthood, we sometimes have people change categories. For example, if a kid like commits a horrible act of violence.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering why those social functions don't also apply to the categories male and female.
Okay, I want to make sure I understand correctly. So you're referring to the categories of fatherhood, and what was the second category that you used?
Well, adulthood versus juveniles.
Okay.
These are categories with a biological and genetic reality, but we still understand there's a social function attached, and we do have people in society change statuses.
Okay. Now I get it. Okay. Thank you for clarifying. So let's think about that for a minute. So let's say, to use you as an example, and I hope you had a wonderful relationship with your father, but let's say for the sake of discussion that you didn't. And let's say he was a terrible father and he walked away from your mom and left you abandoned and did terrible things. And you would still say, my father did those things. He's still your father. In other words, that part, that nature of the relationship between him, even if he was a scoundrel, and you as his biological offspring, that relationship doesn't change. Now, you're right. He would forfeit his standing as maybe being able to have a relationship with you, or that you would be proud of him, or that you would want to be around him. He could forfeit all of those things, but it wouldn't change the fact that he's still your father. And we would even refer to him, you know, oh, what a terrible father you had, or what a shame that your father did that crime and went to jail, et cetera, et cetera. So I would posit that as part of our discussion about this, that even though the status can change, the relationship remains the same. Why don't we pause there? What do you think about that?
Well, on a biological level, but let's say he abandoned me in the womb. My dad was great. I'm not saying any of that.
Yeah, right.
Let's say he had abandoned me in the womb and another guy took that responsibility. Then I might very well say, look, you're not my father. This other guy is. And that's not a claim about biology. I mean, I might say, like, you're my sperm donor, but you're not my father. And the law would transfer his fatherly rights to the new dad. And
right.
None of that is a claim about biology or genetics. That's just a claim about social function, but it does include actually changing what we refer to people as.
Right. So I see all that. I don't dispute any of that. But it would remain nonetheless that if somebody said, who is your father, like, you know, your biological father, you could say, oh, my dad is the man who so lovingly and graciously adopted me and has taken care of me. He's my dad, my father. Yes, yes, I understand that. But biologically, who is your father? You would still say, well, that guy over there in prison, this terrible person who abandoned me, he's my biological father. So you wouldn't say he's my biological sperm donor. Nobody uses that language. Because the truth is, even though he's a scoundrel,
right,
he's still
right.
your biological father. So that's my point, is that doesn't change, even though he, in his social interaction with you, or lack thereof, he forfeited that relationship. He's not your dad. He's not your daddy. He's not your father. The man who adopted you is.
But
you
the,
see what I'm
the
driving
new guy
at?
Is, yeah, but the new, I see what you're saying, but the new guy is not the biological father. He earned that title through his behavior. And I'm thinking about trans people who might not be making any biological or genetic claims. They might simply be saying, born a man, 100% male anatomy, but I function in society and as perceived as a woman.
But see, that's that's another dimension of this. But I would propose that that's not really true, because even though there are people who can, quote unquote, pass for the opposite sex, very few of them can. Very few. And so even though in the mind of the person, a trans person, let's say a man who's presenting himself as a woman, even if in his own mind, that's what he thinks, and he imagines that other people think the same way, they don't. They recognize, even if they won't admit it, even if they're, you know, even if they're loath to admit it, even the category trans woman means this is a man who has changed into a woman. He's not really a woman. That's the difference. In other words, the assigned, whether it's self-assigned or assigned by society, this role that you play, that's different from who you really are or what you really are. And that's what I meant earlier by saying your biological father can never change that status as being your biological father. He may have no place in your life. So I see your analogy, but I don't think the analogy works in this regard.
But someone, I mean, there's a big difference between a trans person who's making biological claims, who I am at a biological genetic level as a woman, even though it says I was born a man. That's one thing. But if a trans person, let's say they fully do pass in our society as a woman, okay, and they correctly recognize, they correctly identify that how they are functioning in that society is as a woman, then...
But see, I would dispute that that's a correct identification. I would say it's an incorrect identification to say that just because people haven't figured out that I'm really a man because I look like a woman and I act like a woman, number one, it doesn't make you a woman. And in essence, it's a form of deception. It's you're pretending to be something you're not, and everyone's fooled, and they all think it's real, but it's really not.
Not if, I mean, you could imagine a situation in which your whole community knows it and was there for it. No one's confused about it in your community, but they still, for whatever reason, mm-hmm, treat you as if you are a woman. That is your social role in that community. There's no misperception. There's no deception involved.
Okay, so in this scenario, fair enough, Joshua. So in this scenario, I thought you were saying that you could pass and nobody knew it. So in this scenario, you could pass, but everybody does know that you're not actually a woman. You're a trans woman in terms of how we would talk about it now. So is that the scenario?
Sure.
Okay. So all that
I think there's something analogous here to the AI problem, where at some point it's probably going to be able to pass as human-like or lifelike. It's just not there yet. I think trans people might be in that same uncanny valley.
Fair enough. Okay, but do you see the inherent flaw in your argument? So to be able to pass for somebody, for something, doesn't mean you are that thing. You can impersonate a police officer. You can impersonate an airline pilot or any, you know, School of Rock, okay, Jack Black impersonated a teacher. But he didn't
a
teacher.
He did become a teacher, though.
Yes, I understand what you're saying, but what I'm saying is that the essence, what makes the story interesting is that he gets caught in the end, because even though he passes a teacher and he was good as a teacher, he could do probably even better than what many teachers who have a license can do. He wasn't legally a teacher. Objectively speaking, he was masquerading, and that's what made the movie so interesting.
If legally they did make him a teacher, and the school said, hey, we really don't care about those degrees in education in the first place.
Well, then that would be different, right?
We'll identify you as a teacher as well.
Because in that case, he would objectively then be a teacher. But you can change that. You can't change your biology. You can't change your genetic makeup. You can't change
exactly
the fact that...
Social status.
Well, hang on. You can't change the fact that you're... I'm assuming you're a man. Just talking with you. You present as a man. You could not deliver a baby because your pelvis is incapable of allowing a child to pass through. First of all, you don't have a womb. A woman's pelvis has the opening there for a baby to pass through. So even just at those levels, we can say objectively someone is male or female. Now, I'm the one who brought up the Jack Black analogy, so it's not a perfect analogy, but it's something that people can, I think, recognize that just because you can pass for something doesn't mean you are that thing.
It's not. I think where I'm not, you keep saying pass as something. I don't think it's passing. If you're passing to me implies you're pretending to be something you're not. You're pretending you have certain body parts or certain brain chemistry or certain bone density, and you don't actually have any of those attributes. You don't actually have a womb. That's one thing. But if society is just saying, hey, we have these social roles, male and female, and you are actually functioning in one of those roles as society defines it, not as it's defined by biology or genetics, then I don't think you're passing as anything you're not. You're just accepting a role, and society does not care about your chromosomes or your genitalia.
Well, a lot of people in society do care.
Because, yeah, most of us do, yeah.
Yeah, I think so. Most of us. So let me ask you this question, Joshua. I'm going to assume for a moment that you're heterosexual. And I'm not trying to say that as an insult.
I'm not.
You're not. Are you homosexual?
Yeah.
Okay. Then let's go in this direction with it. And by the way, not suitable for children. So please take extra precaution, parents. This is not a suitable topic for children. Fair warning, ready, steady, go. Okay. So what if you're attracted to men. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay, so what if a woman presented herself as a man, took extra hormones, facial hair, whatever, and you and he, quote unquote, are becoming friends, and you're thinking, well, this maybe might lead somewhere.
And then
what if you found out that she's actually a woman?
I'd be horrified, yeah.
Why? Why?
Well, because I am one of those people for whom the genitalia, that almost for almost any gay man, that's not going to be a trivial issue.
Okay. I would say it's true for heterosexual men as well.
Yeah, for almost every women too, yeah.
Yeah, so let's say you have, okay, I'm married and been married a long time, but just to kind of in the abstract, if I weren't married and I were looking for a wife and I found somebody who seemed to be a very pretty young woman and I wanted to get closer to her, get to know her, find out more about her, and then she reveals to me that she's not really a she's a he, I too would be horrified. And I too would say, this is absolutely not what I want. You fooled me, but there's no way we are going to go forward. I mean, this sounds like that would be your reaction if it were a woman presenting as a man, right?
Yeah, but that's a case in which those specific details about genitalia and brain chemistry and all that, those details are highly salient and relevant. I don't think that's true when I'm checking out at the grocery store and deciding whether I'm going to call the cashier he or she. Like, then I don't care about any of those things. And most,
well, when do you ever try to imagine a scenario in the grocery store checkout line where you would refer to, you're talking to the cashier in the third person? We typically say you know.
Okay, so if I'm trying to tell the manager, hey, she did a really good job or he did a really good job, there I'm going, and some, or take a better case, take bathrooms or like private areas for women.
Yeah.
There, all that really matters is appearances. Women aren't getting uncomfortable based on having studied the chromosomes of the people in there. They're getting uncomfortable based on secondary sex characteristics and things like that.
How about primary sex characteristics like height and weight, muscle mass, 5 o'clock shadow? It's more than just secondary sex characteristics. It's that, and this is getting back to the issue of passing, even though the term maybe is not the term you would choose. The reason that women have a right to not have men of any type in the restroom is because men can pose a threat to women and children. And so if a woman recognizes this is a dude dressed up as a woman, I don't want to be in here with that guy. I mean, everybody understands that, even if they won't admit it, they understand it because the sexes are different.
So what would you do with the case of, say someone's born female, but then they go
you
through
mean
a
woman.
Kind of...
You mean a woman, right?
Sure, sure.
Okay.
Whichever one. Let's say somebody's born a woman and they go through basically a medical replication of male puberty. They get all the surgeries and everything, and then they commit some horrific crimes that they could only have committed because of all the work they've done. Now, when it, are we going to send that?
I mean, altering your genitalia somehow enables you to commit a crime. What kind of crime could you commit?
I was trying to stay nonspecific for your show. Okay. But like bottom.
You mean
surgery,
like prostitution or something like that?
I mean, rape. Like if you had bottom surgery and then raped somebody.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. So that person is using their kind of fake male anatomy in that way. That has to be a danger to other.
Well, that person is a woman.
A men's facility.
Okay.
Yeah. But wouldn't you want them to go to a men's facility?
No, I would want a woman who is, even though she's presenting as a man, if she's caught and tried and convicted, to go to a women's prison.
Even if she's like 6 feet tall, you know, they've just, she's a kind of medical miracle. She looks like the Hulk or something. Put her in the facility with women.
Yes.
Even though she has seemingly male genitalia and they're all terrified of her.
Yes. Or put her in solitary confinement. I mean, if she poses that much of a threat to the other to the inmate population. But if you reverse the scenario, we hear horror stories all the time of men who consider themselves trans women who commit a crime and are put in a woman's prison. And guess what? Women are getting pregnant. Isn't that weird? I mean, it's one of those situations where when you incarcerate people, if you incarcerate a man in a woman's prison, you're going to have problems. If you if I can add one thing, it doesn't, of course, mean that there aren't other problems that exist with all men in a prison. That certainly is a rampant problem. I'm not saying that that's not a problem.
Right.
But it would be another problem that's unnecessary to foist upon these women inmates if you were to put an actual man who dresses like a woman with them. And for the sake of the woman who's presenting herself as a man, I mean, it's inevitable, if you ask me, that once these men figure out she's not a man, she's a woman, she's going to have other problems on her hands. But I don't know how we got here. I'm not sure where. We've followed an interesting path. I don't know where the path was heading. How about this, Joshua? I've got to take a break. But I would love to talk to you again. And I want to give you a standing invitation to call in again. If you'd like to do that, I would love to give you more time. Okay?
I really appreciate it. If I can take a 10-second comment to the lesbian woman you showed before when she said, you guys took it way too far. A lot of gay men and a lot of gay people in general kind of dropped out of politics after 2013 because we felt we won the culture war. So this new movement, I think, is comprised mostly of other parts of the alphabet, many of which seem to be political identities or mental illness.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. I mean, I really look forward to having another conversation with you, Joshua. I really hope you'll call me back.
Thank you so much. I will.
Okay, good. Thank you. All right. We have, what do we have? 15 minutes left to go. We're going to hit the phones right after this quick timeout. Thanks to network sponsor PushPay. PushPay offers parishes a platform for tracking donations and sacraments, overseeing schedules, mobile apps to help manage your administrative load, and much more. Info at relevantradio.com/pushpay. That's relevantradio.com/pushpay.
Connected to the conversation. Call now, 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on now. Relevant Radio.
The purpose of a man is to love a woman. And the purpose of a woman is
to love a woman. What an interesting conversation I just had with a gentleman a few minutes ago. And I look forward to future conversations with him or other people who have the same perspective we can discuss. I want to introduce the words Planet Fitness into the conversation briefly, but it's important and it's pertinent. Planet Fitness, big gym, national gym, you know, very popular. And in a moment, you're going to hear the voice of Patricia Silva. She was a member of Planet Fitness, you know, getting in shape. And she complained about something that happened one day when she was there at Planet Fitness. And here's what she had to say.
There is a man shaving in a women's bathroom. I realize he wants to be a woman. He gets to be a woman. I love him in Christ. He's a spiritual being having a human experience. He doesn't like his gender, so he wants to be a woman. But I'm not comfortable with him shaving in my bathroom. All right. I just thought I'd say it out loud.
Well, I don't think she realized what would happen. An uproar took place and people were deeply offended. How dare you say that? And so Planet Fitness, rather than saying, oh, gee, I'm sorry, you had this bad experience, we'll try to figure this out, they just simply revoked her membership. So she's the paying member of their gym, and they, you know, your kind are not wanted around here, ma'am. So they revoked her membership. We don't want your kind around here. What do you mean, my kind? Yeah, the kind of people who say, well, I don't want a man in the women's shower area. So here's the epilogue to that story. That happened a while back. And in the interim, their value, according to Fox Business, has plummeted. There being Planet Fitness, has plummeted $400 million after their bungling of this problem. They got the Bud Light treatment, as somebody pointed out. $400 million dive in valuation from a $5.3 billion company to a $4.9 billion in just days. A matter of days, this devaluation took place. Now, it seems as though this story has legs and it's going to continue to unfold. But Planet Fitness has definitely taken the hit. Ms. Silva claimed a 12-year-old girl who was in her locker room was uncomfortable, that would be putting it lightly, with the biological male's presence. So she wasn't just saying, you know, I'm uncomfortable that there's this dude in the showering section where the women are showering, etc. There's also a 12-year-old girl in there. She is uncomfortable. And what was Planet Fitness's reaction? Well, we're going to terminate your membership, ma'am. So that's an example of the problem that exists. Now, I only bring that up because of the conversation we had earlier. I think this is an example of people genuinely saying, you know, go live your life. If that's what you want to do, go live your life, but don't impose it upon me or my wife or my daughters or just people in general who have a right to privacy, have a right to you know, being in, for women anyway, to be in a women's restroom. And they have a right to do that. And you don't have a right to impinge upon that. It's so, to me, so patently obvious. And yet that's the essence of this dispute, this ongoing dispute. All right. And by the way, Caitlyn Jenner, a.k.a. Bruce Jenner, the Olympian athlete, interestingly has weighed in on these kinds of issues and surprisingly in some cases has taken the view that I take on this issue. He has no idea that I exist. I'm not saying otherwise.
It's a weird day when you're in agreement with Caitlyn Jenner and J.K. Rowling.
It is. Isn't it the truth? 888-914-9149. Let's go to, go to Kathleen in Providence. Good morning, Kathleen.
Oh, good morning. I was listening carefully to Joshua, and I noticed a theme. His emphasis was largely on the social role, as opposed to the more of a spiritual depth. For example, I don't wear makeup. I know how to use a drill. I can fix the car and I can chop wood. And my cooking isn't particularly good. But I'm very much female because I don't put my emphasis on my talents or my external. You know, I put it on where God told me who I was. My identity is fixed and it is there. And
I know I'm a little bit different. I have noticed, but that doesn't mean that I like women either.
Right. Have you, I mean, this is a nosy question, so forgive me, Kathleen, but were you ever married? Did you ever have children?
No, I never had children. I grew up with a lot of brothers, and that may have had an effect on my socialization. And, you know, I think that, I am a registered nurse, though, so I have both a tender side and a feminine side that I can turn around and fix things. Even at work, I can fix all kinds of things. Right. So, no, I didn't. But I didn't also find a man that had both sides of his, I hate to say it, brain as developed as mine. So when I would try to talk emotional and things like that, they'd frown or something. And, you know, it just didn't seem to match because I didn't think I could tolerate that long term. And I didn't, you know, I just didn't find both sides functioning as high as mine was functioning.
I see. No, I can understand that. Well, that's an important insight. I'm glad you're bringing that to the table, Kathleen.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for calling. Let's go to Gerald now in Chester, PA. Good morning, Gerald.
Good morning, Mr. Madrid. Sure is a pleasure hearing your voice on my phone, sir. I'll tell you what. No matter what's going on in this world, man, you're grounded in the faith. You know the truth, and you walk in the light. And it's an honor to have you as a member of my faith. Because I'll tell you what. That last fella that you had the conversation with,
Joshua.
Joshua. Yeah. Oh, Jesus. That's for me and my house standing with the Lord. He ain't standing with the Lord. He's an abomination. I'm judging people, but I'm learning not to by listening to your program. And I just want to give you a thumbs up and you, Cyrus and Thomas, the whole crew, because I'll tell you what, there are Catholics out here who deeply need to have they're right spoken for. And, sir, the Lord has picked the winner when he picked you. You are the prince of the airways, sir. And
thank you, Gerald. Thank you. I really appreciate it. Your kindness is much appreciated. And thank you for listening. And, you know, when you heard my conversation with Joshua, I hope, that's just the first of other conversations to happen. Joshua is very engaged. He was on point. He was passionate about his view, even though he and I don't agree on this issue. And it was a good conversation. I'm glad you had a chance to listen to it, Gerald. And thank you again for your kindness. Let's go to Steve in Lincoln, California. Hi, Steve.
Hey, Patrick. Let's get dark here.
Okay. Must we? It's okay. Let's do
it. Yeah, I guess so. So, the SWIFT banking system is set to change to a digital currency in the next couple of years. And so what inevitably will come is a social credit control and, you know, what we will often see it or consider as the mark of the beast. So my question is, you know, how many degrees away from, you know, immediate, let's call it destruction or persecution or whatever the heck, do we have to be away from that destruction before it's moral or prudent to justifiably defend ourselves?
So just to make sure I understand, you're talking about digital currency and the elimination of cash? You didn't say that part, but is that what you're referring to, going cashless?
Well, once we go cashless, then the powers that be will have complete control over who gets to spend on what. And so that includes, you know, food or whatever the heck. So if all of a sudden Catholics are persona non grata, sorry, your card doesn't work anymore, sort of thing.
Okay, so I got that part, and you connected it with, are you asking about defending yourself with lethal force?
Exactly. And so here I'll use another example to bring the two together. So when the men and women were, let's say, in Poland, were going around as ushers and ushering families to their eventual destruction, would it have been appropriate as the father of the home to have killed any one of those ushers who were there to take my family to the next stop before they were tortured and killed? When does it become justifiable?
Mm-hmm. This is a question, and I'm out of time, Steve. I'm out of time, so if I can give any answer, I'll have to do it very briefly. I think I understand your scenario. It depends, as we evaluate any moral act, on three things: the act itself, the intention, and the circumstances. So in order for you and I to determine, would it rise to the level of where you could resort to lethal force to stop a threat against your family, it would depend upon your intention and the circumstances. Now, the act itself we already know, and that is you're going to kill another person who's trying to kill you. Unfortunately, in the 30 seconds that I've got now, I don't have enough time, and forgive me for that, to be able to parse that out. So if you would like to call back, and we'll just pick it up, and we'll start at the beginning, and then we can work our way through that. I do have some thoughts. I just don't have the time to share them. So let's take a rain check. Call me back, Steve, and we'll do that. And Jennifer in Modesto, David in Portland, Maine, Grace in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, Luke in Fremont, California, all of you who are holding, call me tomorrow, okay? And we'll talk. And until then, I'll pray for you. Please pray for me. God bless you.